Okay, so like I said, I started on the video that we did because originally I was going to start here just to go in order, but now that you've looked at it, you understand why I didn't start here because, you know, I like you. So, fine. So, just quickly the mission, and then I'll give the Gemara over to someone. Just to understand, right, we've mentioned this before, but the Gemara is sometimes a bit unpredictable how things happen. The fact that these sugya that we've been dealing with, these Stam-related sugya, the Sefer Torah sugya, appear in Menachot, is the fact that you have such a large section in the middle of Menachot of this is surprising. And the way it happens is really seems quite accidental. So the Mishnah was talking about things that are ma'akev zeh et zeh, right? Things, components of a whole that are necessary for one to fulfill his halachic obligation of the mitzvah. So the Mishnah had introduced a series of them. So Shiva k'nei menorah ma'akvin zedzeh. You need all seven branches of the menorah, otherwise they prevent the menorah from being meaningful at all. Shiva nerotem ma'akvin zedzeh. Right, so the kanim is the branches. The nerot are the actual lamp parts of it. Shtei parashiyot shebe mezuzah makvot zo et zo, and then this leads us to what we're talking about now is that the parashiyot of the mezuzah are both necessary. Right, you don't get partial credit if your mezuzah only has shema and va'afta. You need both parashiyot, or it is not a mezuzah. What?
Obvious.
Thank you. And afilu k'tav echad me'akvan, even a single piece of writing, let's leave it at that for a moment, would prevent it from fulfilling his obligation if it was missing. Arba parshiot shebetfilin ma'akvin zo et zo. The four parshiot of tefillin are necessary and prevent each other, right? You can't have three. Afilu k'tav echad me'akvan, even a single word, a single letter, will prevent you from fulfilling your mitzvah. Arba tzitziot ma'akvot zo et zo. The four tzitzit are required. Arbatan mitzvah achat, because they are all the same mitzvah. Rabbi Shmuel omer arbaatan arba mitzvot. Rabbi Shmuel says it is not true. They are all separate mitzvot. Okay, that is how we. What?
So does he hold their mitzvah?
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. But that is how we get into this conversation to begin with. Okay. Right, it was just a series of things. Now again, parenthetically, though I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning a lot. Why does the Gemara often organize things this way? Right, in non-conceptual but pragmatic linkages. Links.
So you can learn them out.
Are they remotely related to each other? Fine. And k'nei menorah. And right? Why does the Mishnah list things this way?
They're on the act of each other.
By the way, it's not just this. If you look in Chav Zayin, it's the right. You have other Mishnah, Shnei Seirei Yom Kippurim. Right? That's what we got into because we're talking about Karbanot that do the same.
Right.
Why does the Mishnah mention things this way, Daniel? Either Daniel. I was talking to Daniel who's using his phone, but you know. Yeah. What? Because Mishnayot were originally oral, and therefore simple organizational structures like this help memory. There's not a lot of right. This is not so complicated. Remember, these are mnemonics, right? One of the ways you do that is, hey, we're talking about a lot of things that have multiple components, which are all necessary. That's why you organize it this way, because it helps you remember. We're in the middle of these ma'akvot zo'et. That's how we get here, okay? That is just the pshat background of how we got here. Now, who wants to start the Gemara, Yosef, who wanted to read Gemara inside and not look so much at source sheets? Therefore, you have brought it upon yourself.
Sure.
Good. So, start reading the Gemara. Good. So, on Chavtet, the Gemara picks up on the mezuzah point. And that is where we pick up. Good.
Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav.
What?
Which is the...
You skipped a very key word there, but okay.
Oh, pshita, sorry. Pshita Amar Rav
Yehuda. No, pshita. That is the key word. Please do not run past the word that actually is the point of the entire line. Pshita.
I haven't got all my stops correctly.
And why don't you start from the... You didn't get the... Main point here. Come on.
It's so simple.
Good. So the Gemara first quotes the Mishnah. Shtei parshiyos b'mezuzah ma'akvot zo et zo. Ve'afilu k'tav echad ma'akvan. Good. Now read it.
Shita yom shita.
Well.
Shita.
What? Someone. Punctuate. Translate.
It's obvious that if you don't have half the...
What is obvious?
It's obvious that if you don't have half the mezuzah, then it's... not kosher. It's like, why do we need the Gemara Mishnah to tell us this?
Good. So now, Dove, tell me, what is the structure now of the Gemara? What is the Gemara looking for?
It's looking for something that is not obvious and that would make it mock.
Correct, right? Meaning, here's the goal structurally of the next few lines, right? Is the mission? The assumption of the Gemara is that the Mishnah would not say something that is so so obvious that it doesn't require stating. Right? But it also obviously needs to be true. Right? Therefore, the Gemara is now going to look for something that is taught out by the line that there is something missing in a mezuzah, right, in the writing of a mezuzah that invalidates the mezuzah, but it's not obvious that it invalidates the mezuzah, and therefore, any suggestion of the Gemara can be negated for one of two reasons. Either it is obvious and therefore also need not be stated, or yes, it is untrue, right? Untrue should always be a reason for something, right? Meaning it does not invalidate the mezuzah. So the Gemara starts with pshita, which is, isn't this obvious? And now the Gemara must launch and find something which is true but not obvious. Yes, Doug.
Does this also apply for the issue
that for Yep. And you'll see, we go straight from here to Devar Torah, meaning there's certain halachot that are shared, and this is something we're going to have to pay attention to in the next few blot, right? How much of the sugyot we go through, I don't know, but however many of the sugyot we do, all these writing halachot apply to mezuzah, tefillin, and Sefer Torah, and when there are differences, we need to explain those differences. But fundamentally, these halachot should apply to all those halachically, right, mandated written texts. Okay? Good. Yosef. Continue. So pshita.
Isn't it obvious? Skip the line. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav says Rav Yehuda, name of Rav. Lot lo nitzacha. Lo nitzacha. We do not need.
What is? It is not needed.
It is not needed.
What is that? So what's the meaning? What does lo nitzacha tell you? What does the phrase lo nitzacha mean in the Gemara? No, it's the other way. It is necessary, meaning lo nitzacha ella, right? Right, that's right. It is only needed. Meaning, remember the structure. The Mishnah, what is it teaching us that is not obvious but also true? Answer, lo nitzricha ella. It is only necessary to teach the following case, which is indeed a novelty. Right? That's what lo nitzricha ella always means. Right? Which is, it is necessary, this statement, this Mishnah, is necessary to teach the following, which again, is neither obvious nor false. Okay? So lo nitzricha ella lekotza shel yud. It is needed to teach you that if you are missing kotza shel yud, then your mezuzah, your sefer Torah, your tefillin are invalid.
The kotza is a chipped off piece.
And that is going to be the million dollar question: is what is the kotza shel yud? How many opinions are there on what the kotza shel yud are? Five. There are five. Yes, there are the four in the chart, and then there's the bala iter afterwards, which is even crazier, right? Five.
Okay.
But what now? Already tell me structurally. Who already read Tosfot? Anyone get to Tosfot yet? Good. What is Tosfot? Before we can get to what Rashi and Tosfot say, why might any Rishon not like the interpretation offered by other Rishonim? I want to help you get into the mind of Rishonim.
Because it would still be obvious.
Or it's false, right? The same thing that the Gemara is trying to do, right? Remember, the Rishonim are trying to interpret the Gemara, which means that if for something to work in the Gemara, it must be not obvious and true, right? When the Rishonim challenge the interpretations of the other Gemara, they can challenge the other Rishonim for one of two reasons. Either they think that what the Rishon said is also obviously invalid, or is so minimal such that it would not invalidate. Right? Meaning the exact same structural point of the Gemara. I understand that this is a very technical sugya, but I actually think it's important in terms of being able to think like the Gemara, right? So the Rishonim are going to do the exact same thing, right? They are going to judge the other options offered by the variety of Rishonim on those same two standards. Okay? Good. So the Gemara then says, whatever Kotzer Shiyud is, hold that thought for a moment, okay, which is?
The Kotzer Shiyud, what, continue you mean?
Yes. Okay. Veha.
Veha, and so, Nami Pshita.
That is also?
Obvious.
Right? Now, again, a structural point. And this is a bit complicated. The Rishonim here, what are they looking for in their interpretation of Kotzer Shiyud? Right? I want you to understand this. This is very technical, but it'll get you into the mindset of the Gemara, which is
easy understanding or something that disproves it.
Well, something that is obvious, but not obvious enough that the Gemara didn't think it wasn't obvious. Do you understand how nuanced that is? Right? Meaning, the first stage of the Gemara said, Kotzer Shiyud works, because the Gemara at first thought it is true but not obvious. But the Gemara then says,
it's
also obvious. Right? Therefore, the Rishonim are looking for something that in their intuition is, in the end of the day, obvious, but not as obvious as some other things. Right? I understand that that is very, very nitpicky. But that is what the Gemara is doing. So then the Gemara offers something else, which is?
Viha, and so, Nami Ella, rather,
Lechidi'idoch de Rav Yehuda. It's teaching this other statement of Yehuda, Amar Rav, in the name of Rav.
Amar Rav, Diyama Rav Yehuda, the name of Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, which I'll repeat a second time. Ko'ot she'en goyel.
Gvil. What's gvil?
The cloth.
Thank you. The cloth, meaning the blank part of the cloth, or the blank part of the parchment.
Mokaf shemokaf la me'arba'at ruchotei.
Ruchoteha.
Ruchoteha. It's written.
Any letter that does not have what?
Four.
Good. Does not have blank space on the cloth on all four sides.
Mm-hmm. Psula. It's pasul. Just continue.
Apparently not. Apparently that is true, but not obvious.
How does that work? Write a letter next to
each other. Arba ruchoteha. How could? Okay, guys, nothing here is conceptual. This is all practical. How might something not be surrounded by arba ruchoteha? Right?
It's touching another letter.
Touching another letter, or what else?
It's touching the edge of the cloth.
Yeah, why is that obvious? Something is not a letter if it touches the edge of the page. Why do you need blank space?
Doesn't it have enough space to...
Is that obvious?
Well, there are certain spaces that have to be in between.
And guess what? That's what the Gemara is teaching you. But did you know that before the Gemara taught it to you? Where do you think that the halacha that you learned in Zafras came from? This page. And since I know how many of you either took or are doing Zafras, I don't even feel bad about making you understand these technicalities, because this is where it comes from. Yes, it's obvious because you already know it. Great. Thanks. It wasn't obvious until you learned it. Good.
Did you even do it when Svi told you to last year? He said no one did last year.
Megillah.
Okay, guys. Let's at least try to get the Gemara down. So then the Gemara says, Amar Ashi'an bar Nidbach, Mishmei de Rav Yehuda, Nikev tocho shel hay, kasher. If the inside of the hay, whatever that is, has a hole in it, it is still kasher. But Yerecho, whatever that is, it's not the inside. Pasul. Each of these rules will have to be defined. Wait. Amar Abzera, Lididi Mefarshel Mimei de Rav Yehuda ve Rav Yaakov. Amar Lididi Mefarshel Mimei de Rav Yehuda. Someone explain this from somebody. Nikev tocho shel hay kasher. If the inside of the hay has a hole, it is good. Yerecho. It's yerech, which is not its inside. Let's for a moment say it's the... Well, you can see Rashi already has two interpretations. So not the inside, the yerech, whatever that is. Again, same as we did at the beginning of the first Gemara, right? We're going to highlight all the problems here. Right? Each stage, we're going to have to explain every little thing here. Im nishtayer... Bo kishir ot ktana kasher. If the letter has enough size as a little letter, which has to be interpreted, it is valid. V'imlav pasul. Igra chamua de Rabbi Abba. Top of the next page. If tzikale kara dehe, deha'am, binikva, right, that the read the leg of the hay in the word ha'am had a hole in it, right? Aza l'gemedi Rabbi Abba amar le'im mishtayer bo kishir od k'tana kasher vim lav fasul. If it still has the size of a letter, then it is kasher. And just a few more lines. Rami bar Tamre du chamua de Rami bar Dikula. Rami bar Tamre, who was the father-in-law of Rami bar Dikula. If skule kare divav divi. Now, you better get this right. What is it? De? Read that. What? Well, that is the question, isn't it? Right? Binikva, it had a hole. Azim Medir Vizera, Amar Le, Aisi Yenuka de Lochachem Velo Tibesh. Bring me a child who is neither smart nor stupid. Ikari Le, Vyareg. No, sorry. Vayaharog. Karile vayaharog kasha. That's the whole point. Ilo yeharegu upasul. What's the problem? There is a word that is either God killed or was killed. Right? Depending on whether you read it passively, yahareg or yaharog.
Yeah, but what is
that?
Right?
Right?
It has to be a problem. The letters has whether to do with the kudot.
No. It has to do with whether you read that as a yud or a vav. Right? It's ya, right? It's, well, it's really... it's on Kol Bechor, right? Now, okay, let's just figure out which word it is. Guys, you know this parsha, so tell me which word is it, and then we'll understand what Gemara is saying.
Vayaharog. Okay.
Vayaharog, right? God killed, and not...
Was killed.
Thank you, good. He was not killed, right? He was not killed. Good. Now, how would it become Yehareg? Because then it would be two yuds, and then it doesn't need nikudo. Two yuds will
still be
no, will be yehareg, because that will imply that it is a tsere. Right? That's the difference, right? It's the question is it vav yud by yaharog, or is it just yehareg without the vav? Right? That was the question. Right? And it was, did God kill every bechor, or was God killed
by every
bechor? Right? That's wrong. Okay. Two yuds. No, two yuds will always be an A, right? An A sound, right? Because it'll be a tsere, right? Even though the Torah has no nekudo, when you have two yuds, you'll know to read it yehareg, right? That's the point, right? Rather than vayaharog.
I went about like if you had the word kayin.
What? Correct. In this case, you know it. It's not always. In this case, you'll know that's what it is, right? That is yehareg, right? You're not always, right? It could be multiple things. In this case, that's you. Okay, I should replace it. That's you spell yehareg rather than yaharog, okay? Fine. Good. That is just the contours of this sugya. Now, before we look into Kotzel Shulyud, now we've already know on a practical level, what are we looking for in the interpretation of Kotzel Shulyud? Again, we've said this five times. Looking for something that is? Not Pashut, but true. Not Pashut, but true. Now, what would make something not Pashut, but true? What is the line? If I asked you, what's the line between something that's obvious and not obvious? So one is that you could have a source. You could have an explicit source, fine. But what else? Right? What? Okay, good. It doesn't look like it. Meaning? Good. So here's where I want you to start thinking conceptually. Today we're going to try to set up just the pshat. But where I want to get you to conceptually, right, is that there are different reasons that a letter might not work in the Sefer Torah. One is it's obvious because it doesn't look like the letter. So, for example, if I asked you why do the letters DAD not spell mom, what would you tell me? You just said because they don't. That's not an M. That's not an O. That's not an M. That's a D, an A, and a D, right? Meaning what? Sometimes, what? Why is a letter not going to work? Because it's not that letter. Just not. It just isn't, right? Good. If you turn to your Mazel Tov, if you're married, you have children, you turn to your 6-year-old child in first grade who is learning how to write, or I guess
five or four, whenever they learn to write. Whatever. I mean, Mayer knows how to write both languages, so it's not
Elaine,
true. First grade. Yes, he knows how to lane. We know. Yes, he knows how to lane. My son is six. Right.
So
yes, they learn when they're five in the school in Ephra. They learn. Yes, they learn in a sorority trap, but they learn when they are five. Yes. Vidya. No, just a Aronitzia.
Yeah, the Gush is a little. Einstein.
Anyways, guys, when my son writes, and let's say sometimes writes a letter backwards, which is a totally standard thing for a kid to do, right? Or their A's look a little bit like O's, right, or something like that, right? So I want you to get to this. Why might a letter be invalid? So one is
it doesn't look like
it just doesn't look like what it's you're looking for at all, right? Right, meaning sometimes you look at a kid and right, like my three, like now 4 year old, right? Sometimes he'll think he's writing. Right, because his older brother writes. So he will write something, and it will look like nothing. He doesn't know how to write. It's just a bunch of squiggles on the paper. And if I ask you, why does that not say happy birthday, right? The answer is?
Because
it says nothing. There is nothing there. There are a bunch of scribbles, right? Sometimes I'll look at it, and I'll say, why does that not say happy birthday? Because it says happy birthday, right? Because the A looks like an O. Right? And sometimes I'll say, I can look at it and say, I can tell it looks like happy birthday, but, right? But you didn't write the B quite right. Right? Those are three ways. Now, those three ways are going to be exactly what happens here. I'm giving away the end. Right? But sometimes a letter might be invalid because it is nothing. Right? It is not a letter. Sometimes it's invalid because it looks like another letter. Right? And sometimes it's invalid because
it's not complete.
It's just incomplete. Do you understand how those might be different levels of invalidation?
Yeah.
Right? And how at each psul, each invalidation, you're going to have to ask which one of those is it? And that might have differences. Right? That might matter. Right? That's what we're going to get to. Right? That now, what type of differences might you look for?
Being able to first figure out what it is as opposed to if it's just a little
right? What type of differences you might look for?
The translation of the word?
No. Like how would you know what type of invalidation you're talking about?
You look at it.
Well, if the word is the right word, and if the letter just doesn't look
the context
off by a little bit, that's too long.
Maybe I'm not making myself clear. Right? How might I know if something, right, like, given that letters in a Sefer Torah have to be written a certain way, right, how could I tell if the reason that a letter is invalid is because it happens to be written wrong for the purpose of Sefer Torah, or because it's meaningless drivel? How might I know halachically? How might I be able to tell?
If you knew the part, if you knew what was there,
so you know how the letter was supposed to look.
Well, so there's a physical way of telling, but what else? If
the source says so,
or if I look in other areas of halacha, does it carry over? Right. Remember, it's not only Sefer Torah. There are other things we write. For example, sure. What else?
Tefillin
is okay, but those are similar halacha. What else? Do we write anything which is not stam, which has halachic significance of being written? That's also part of stam. A get. A ktuba. Other things that don't have the same sanctity requirements. They might not, for example, need the tagin, or they might need crowns, but they need to say something, right? If something is meaningless drivel, is it going to work in a ktuba?
No.
If something is not a perfect letter because a Sefer Torah happens to have higher expectations of writing, might it work in a get?
Yes.
It might. That's a good way of telling what type of invalidation we're talking about, is how universal is it? Right?
But you could clearly tell which one you're talking about based on what you're reading.
Okay, but this is what we're going to see, is that this question of the different ways a letter might be invalid is going to spill over into where does it apply, and as we'll see now, what does it even mean? So let's start with Kotso, Shell,
yud. So, what is the kotzel shel yud?
It's the little...
Okay. Don't give me an answer. If you're going to say something, give me a name behind it. There are five possibilities. Don't, unless you... Okay, here's the rule. If you give me a position without a name, I'm going to assume that means that you're offering your own position and therefore assume that you are on the level of Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rosh Mordechai, and therefore are, can offer a position without ascribing it to the person you're quoting. Good. Now tell me. Good. Start with Rashi. What does Rashi think Kotzel Shel Yud means? I even gave you a summary chart, so. What? So let's look at Rashi inside. Rashi says, Kotzel Shel Yud, Regel Yemini Shel Yud. Very good. Okay, I think I do need the board here. Okay.
Would we say the other thing? It's like so they just scribble.
Oh, you're putting some drops.
Ah, there's one in between.
Oh, sheet that the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I read so
it's the wrong letter altogether.
Okay, Nachum, it's your chance to shine.
Uh-oh.
Nachum already learned Safras last year. So good, Nachum, I need you to write me a halachically kosher yud on the board.
Whoa.
I need you to write me a halachically, a big halachically kosher yud. Like you would do it in the Sefer Torah, just to, given that this is not cloth and this is not a quill.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to not do.
Erasable... Good. Write me a nice, big, kosher yud. Kosher. With everything. Tag in everything.
I'm glad they came to this on recording.
Good.
I'm a horrible artist. Well,
you are a sofer.
It's not artist, it's suffering. It's suffering.
It's calligraphy.
Yeah. I don't think that was horrible.
That's fine.
Okay.
Gotta give it more
fat. It's a little
fat.
Thicker on top. But
very good. Okay, you know what? Can you just give me, by Ginsburg's Makami is a box of new black markers. Can you just get me one? Okay. So this is a bit technical, but we're going to try to pin down what they're saying, okay?
The people listening just have to try a picture of themselves.
Yes, people listening, I'm sorry. Right, you can sit there yourself, and you can take a piece of paper and draw a yud. Or you can Google yud in Torah. I'm sure something will come up, I am sure. Thank you, Nachum. Okay. Safras guys, this is what you have to look forward to.
In YU, people who knew Safras, it was a good way to make an extra like $50. Because whenever they would need someone to sign a get, they would get the people who knew Safras to write their name. And it would take you about 30 seconds and you get paid for it. So. Okay.
I have a future.
Looks at the Danish.
It's not exactly.
No, just write your name. Okay.
I'm easier on cloth.
Okay, so here's the yud. That's fine. Yeah. So Rashi thinks, what is the kotzo shel yud according to Rashi?
What should I say?
The right side.
Good. The right side. Who really doesn't like it and why?
Tosfot.
Why doesn't he like it?
Because it's also.
Ah, good. Remember what I said? Just like the structure in the Gemara is, something which is true but not obvious, right? The Rishonim apply that to this. So, Rabbeinu Tam says,
what does it mean by the right side?
Look at Tosfos. Look at Tosfos. Look at Tosfos.
Okay.
Tosfos says what?
Here's for Kuntris and explains the Rashi. Regali mina, the right side. The kasha de habshita, but it's a question because this is also obvious.
Why?
Because the inzes oats, that this
good.
Is not called the letter.
Right? So here's the Tosfos' argument, okay? This is terrible. Right? This is like a lump. Okay? So whatever.
It's okay.
Right?
It works.
Whatever. Tosfos' argument is that Rashi thinks that this is the regel yamini. This is the kotso shel yud. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that is not a valid yud. And what is Tosfos' question?
That's obvious.
No kidding. That is not a yud. Right? That is
a line.
That is a line. right? So what are you telling me that the Gemara ever thought that this was not obvious? This
is obvious. Why does he assume this whole thing was what he's talking about? Maybe like just like this part is.
Because it says regel. Yeah, I mean,
right, the right side.
So no, 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 like regel. No, the right leg, not the right side.
But there's only one leg.
There's only one leg.
Correct.
So the right side of the leg.
No, because a thin leg is kosher. Right? Fails the second test. It fails the true-false test. It is false. A thin leg is kosher. A non-leg is obvious. Hence, Rashi's, right? Tosa says, right? I reject this. Right? Okay. Good. Again, this is just structural. But you see what Tosa is saying? Tosa is saying, right? The Gemara is clearly not talking about things which are non-letters, because non-letters are obvious, and therefore, again, our test here is it cannot be obvious, and it cannot be false. Good. So Tosus offers possibly two. Specifically, Rabbeinu Tam. What's Rabbeinu Tam's name, by the way? What is his first name? His name is not Tom.
Is it Rabbeinu?
Come on, guys. Why is Rabbeinu Tam called Rabbeinu Tam? His name is not Tom. Max, what is Rabbeinu Tam's first name? Yaakov. Yaakov Ish Tam. Yoshev Ohalim. It was a medieval nickname for people whose name was Yaakov. What? Because this was just a thing. The medievals, if your name was Yaakov, they liked calling you Tam. He's not even the only one. Right? There's the Rabbeinu Tam, and there's a bunch of other Rabbeinu Yaakovs that also go by Tam. They all go by Tam.
That is confusing.
Yes. For example, there's Rabbi Yaakov of Marvej, who sometimes goes by Rabbeinu Tam of Marvej.
What does it mean if the leg is too far to the right? That it could be straight like above?
Nope.
That's a range.
So what does Rabbeinu Tam say? What does Rabbeinu Tam say? Umifaresh, Rabbeinu Tam, that what?
Who Rosho Kafuf. I couldn't read that word.
Duhu Rosho Kafuf.
The top was cut off.
No. What does Kafuf mean?
Bent over.
Bent over. Code social yod means that instead of this being written correctly, how is it written?
Kind of like that.
Yes, right? It is tilted down, right?
This is Tosfot, right?
Right, which means this. Instead of this going this way, this is why I need you to do it Safras-wise. He says it is, move over here, right? Right, this part, this goes like that.
Either in or out.
Down. Kafuf. Right? This is the coats, and the invalid one they're talking about is if it looks like that. Instead of being going up, it goes down.
I'm saying, could it go like that and that, or just...
Kafuf. It's bent down. Right? Meaning it doesn't go up, it goes down.
Oh, I understand, but can it bend this way and still be kosher?
That's still pointing up. He says kafuf down, right? That's what we know. He says is invalid.
Both still pointing up. Just
like a second. Okay. Down, okay. And he says kedamrinim besamuch mipnei ma kafuf rosho. So then he has a question from the Gemara in Chelek. And his problem is as follows, that in the Gemara in Chelek, it tells a story of a nar yichtevem nahani yud, im hishlich nar even bekir, voze rosha osim yud. He said, wait a second, I have a problem, because what does this whole Gemara imply? That what does a yud need?
Two
sides, right? And a crown. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells a story where the expression is that a kid, what is?
Throws the rock on the wall. And it
throws throws a pen at the wall. And draws a yud. Now, what is a yud going to look like if you throw it at the wall? If I can do this, right?
Like a hole in the wall.
It's going to look like a hole.
If you throw that at it, what is it going to do?
If I throw the marker at the thing
right
now,
it's going to look like a line.
Thank you. It's going to look like a line, right?
Yeah.
He said, wait a second, doesn't that imply that a yud doesn't need what?
The whole, really talented, right?
It's the way, you know, like...
So that's what he's saying, right?
Right? Like what we do in script, right? Like that, right?
Yeah, but that looks
and
like
what does he say?
It's kosher.
That's Kain Shel Yud. It's not really a yud. It's like, whatever. That's not what it means. Don't worry about that too much. Okay, fine. But Rabbeinu Tam, therefore, says... Right? that
the invalidation is, instead of this going up, it goes down.
Okay, that's Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, possibility two. What?
Where's the story from?
Sanhedrin. Right, Sanhedrin. Where'd the cover to this... Oh, there it is.
Yosef.
Okay. Good.
Fine. Possibility three. The Rush. Someone turned to the Rush.
I was so confused.
Did I say it was easy?
No. I said it was difficult.
I said it was difficult. I'm, you know, by the way, conceptually, this thing is not so hard, but there is a lot of technicality. But okay, so the Rush in Oat Yud Bet says. Now, admittedly, you didn't have to do all of it, right? But I didn't tell you where, but you should have actually been able to figure out where. How should you have been able to figure out where? What? No. Because there's a picture here of a yud. Right? Because he drew out what letter he was talking about so you would understand it. So you should have been able to figure out that if you wanted to know how to talk about a yud, you go to the part of it where it's talking about a yud. Yay. Okay. You're right. It really is my fault. I should have told you that. But okay. Fine. So he says, the yud. Omer Rabbi. Okay, guys, you see where there's a yud? Like a big yud, like a drawn out yud, right? Where he's trying to explain the yud to you. So he says, the yud. Omer Rabbeinu Tam Shiyehei Smol Kafuf Lamata Kazeh K'damer B'Vakom Meitz Rabba V'Vnei Ma Rosha Shal Yud Kafuf.
What's that you came?
One second. No, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. Wait. See, this is why it is confusing.
No, but he's quoting,
right?
He quotes Rabbeinu Tam.
Right? No. It does need to be kafuf. Right? Sorry. Rabbeinu Tam is not saying this. Right? Well, he's saying the letter has to be kafuf. He's talking about this. Right? That this goes through. Right? That the tag goes a little bit through. Goes down.
So there's that extra line.
Right? And if it isn't, then it's not kosher. Right? That's what he says. Right? She small kafuf lemata kazeh. Right? You see his picture? Kedam bro is rabba. Vene ma rosha shel yud kafuf. Vitani nami hatam goi tefillin katav echad makvan. Right? So he says, uparech ale pshita. He says, that's obvious. Vekamra linskala kederav Yehuda marav kotzel sheyud ba'akev. Uperish Rashi, zeu regel shel yamin. Well, make sure I get this right. Rashi, zeu regel shel yamin shekafuf lemata. Right? Rashi says this is the right side. Because of the pshita ma'akev zeu ikar gufa'o. Right? Rashi is wrong because this can't be the kotzel sheyud. Because then the Gemara would be talking about this, and this is obvious. It has no. It's not a letter. Right? It's just not a letter. So that obviously is puzzle. Perish Rabbeinu Tam, Shehu Litzad Smol, Shekafuv Lamata, the Mashma, Lishna, the Roshu Kafuv Litzav Yamin, Kari Raglo. The Amru Nami Psikta, Kibe Yud, Hey, Hashem Tro Lamim, Olamazen, Ivram Behe, Olamaba Yud. Where he then quotes in Agarata that the world is created with a Yud and a Hey, Ma Yud Yeshon Nikuda Achad Lamata. Romez lemeitim shardin legeinom. It has a little bit of a dot which goes under, which points in the direction that those who are evil will go to Gehenom. Nekuda achat lemala, and then a dot above. Romez atidin la'alot, which implies that eventually they'll go up. Right. So this is midrashically how the Gemara is understanding Yud. Right. That this is really an arrow, and this is an arrow. Right. That evil people will go down, but they'll eventually get out. Right. That's theologically how it's reading it. Fine. Nukuda achat lemala romesh in la load fine shneamar Hashem meimino mechayem orid shaol vayal vahei patuach lechol tzad remez lebalei tshuva, and the hey is open as a balei tshuva, right? They can get back in. Yud kafuf, and the yud is tilted. Remez lebay olam shu kafufim nechu kol panim leirakon, is that people are. And when they come in the world, people are like folded up. Lefi drasha zo tag liyud limala vigam kafuf lamata. According to this, the tag of the yud or the crown of the yud has to go up and down. The Efshar de Kotzo Shal Yud de Paraka Komet. So he said, what is the Kotzo Shal Yud there for? Hainu Tag Shal Mala. The Yud Kafuv Hainu Regel Yemini. So, Tosos says that the invalidation here is this. You're missing this part of the crown. And the Rush says you're missing
the top.
Right, so Pop, I know this is technical. I got it. I went through this last night to make sure I had it clear, and it's still confusing me. Right? But let's just do it simply. Let's do it without the
but they're still
filled in. Rashi says this is the Kotzel Shel Yod, and an invalidated Yod is therefore this. Everyone else says this can't be because
it's obvious.
This is not a letter. Rabbeinu Tam says, what's the Kotzel Shel Yod? The bottom part of the crown, and an invalid letter that doesn't have a Kotzel Shel Yod is that type of Yod, right? That only has a crown on top. The Rosh says, the Kotzel Shel Yod is
the top. So an invalidated Yod would be without the top.
Would be without the top.
But
yes. By the way, parenthetically, right? How do you say Yud in English, in Old English, and how do you say crown of a letter in Old English? It's an English phrase, a very old school English phrase, but just so you understand what it means, because it's used in the Sermon on the Mount for anyone who knows the New Testament at all. It is a translation of... There's an expression in Hebrew that you keep the entire Torah, including down to the last Kotzo Shel Yud, right? Meaning even the most insignificant thing. Right? In English, the phrase is a yud is a jot, right? And a crown is... No? Never read the Sermon on the Mount by Jesus?
That's on my list.
Yes. He's telling you that he's not trying to get you to not keep any, even the last jot and tittle. Right, of the Torah.
That's how the Bible is written.
In the King James, yes. Right? A jot is a yud. What he's saying is that he wants you to, right? That he's not trying to uproot even the yuds and even the tagin on the yuds. Right? That's what it means. Jot and tittle is the yud and even the tagin on the yud. Okay?
Wait, but I don't get why that's any less obvious than missing half the letter.
Wait. Why is it not as obvious that this is...
You're missing part of the letter, though.
Are you?
Yes.
Really? Raise your hand if you saw a yud didn't have a crown, that you'd recognize the letter.
Yeah, but you could tell it's the yud, but it's still possibly part of the letter, though.
Oh, and now you understand the difference. You understand how I said this. Rashi's... The problem with Rashi is that Rashi is describing an invalidation, which is...
obvious.
Why is it obvious?
Because it makes it complete.
Because it's not a letter.
Whatever. Right.
Both the Rosh and Rabbeinu Tam are describing something which looks like a yud, and the invalidation is not in whether it's a letter, but
whether it looks like a letter.
No. Is it a letter that has all the halachic requirements? But anyone would look at it and say that's a yud. It might not be a halachically valid yud, but they look at it and they say it is a yud. That's why it's not obvious. Because the fact that the Torah is right.
See.
You understand the difference between those?
Yes.
Going back to our mashal, right? It's the difference between my three-year-old's writing, right? This doesn't say happy birthday, right? Right? Why? Because it doesn't.
That's not
right. Right? But why doesn't this say happy birthday? Right? Why doesn't this say happy birthday? Etc.
Because it's a little messed up.
Because he's writing it backwards. Little kids do. Right? You can't just say that doesn't say happy birthday because that's not a letter. Right? You know what that is. That's an H reflected in a mirror.
Right. It still looks like happy birthday.
Right? You understand? There's a difference between this not saying happy birthday and this not saying happy birthday. Right? There's a difference between this not being a yud because it's just a line. Right? And this not being a yud because...
Yeah,
it's a yud, it's just not a kosher yud.
But I don't get it, because if you know the halacha, then that it should be simple to you that it's not a yud.
But you don't know the halacha yet because the Gemara is teaching it to you. Therefore, it is not obvious.
Even if you know the halacha, you can
anything,
tell
it's what?
If it isn't obvious, then why would the Gemara call it obvious?
Ah, and that's the problem. Is that...
And
this is the middle category, where the Gemara at first thought it was obvious, and then concluded... Sorry, the first... the Gemara thought it was not obvious, and then thought it was obvious.
No, it knows it's
and
not obvious.
That
it
would be
it's not obvious. Well,
what?
They know it's not. This is not obvious.
What?
But they know it's that this is obvious, though.
No, they
if
don't.
It's missing the right leg. They know it's obvious.
The right leg is too obvious. The other ones, right? And this is the problem, right? This is the problem, right? Now the answer might just be it's obvious because once you know it's the halacha, no one would think that it's not ideal, but still good, right? But I assume that's the progression, is that it's obvious once you know the halacha. What we want is something, what you want is something that even once you know the basic halacha, it's still not obvious, right? So that's possibility three. What is the fourth possibility? The Ridvag. There's actually a chart there, right?
I'm not working in. I just know we did the Ridvag.
Right? Right, the Ridvag says, what is the Kotzo Shel Yud? And who said this before? This was sort of what Daniel said. Daniel! Daniel! Yeah. Yeah. The Ridvag is the one who sort of comes to Daniel's defense. And he says, what is... Right, look at the end of this Ridva. You can read the rest later, but let's look at the end for a minute. He says, Inami. Look at the end of the Ridva in 4. Kiel nekuda shel mata shamarnu omar kain. V'yesh pershu. Some say, ki kotzel shel yod, hu bisof haregel hayimini. Not what Daniel said, which is, get rid of the thickness, but...
The length.
Get rid of the length.
Yeah, but that's still... Wait.
Now explain to me why that is a good interpretation.
Why is it good?
Yes.
Because it's not a complete letter.
So, therefore...
You can still tell that it's a yud, but it's not necessarily...
Very good, Nachum. So now explain to me the Gemara. The Gemara would say, if you're mitzing the kotzer shel yud, it is puzzle. And the Gemara says, that's not obvious. Why did the Gemara think it wasn't obvious? Because you can sort of make out that it's a yud.
Yeah.
But the Mara's Maskana is, no, that is obvious. Why?
Because you can still tell it's a yud. Because
it's not a yud, right?
No, it's not obvious.
But remember, the Gemara had two stages. One where I thought it was obvious and one where I thought it wasn't.
Right.
Right? Again,
why would you say that it's
here,
not
guys,
obvious?
Here, guys, look at this example, right? Here, right? This word, can you make out that it says happy?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So... Can you understand why you might have two stages? Where I would say, is that an H? And you would say, well, maybe it's just a backwards H. But then I said, no, is it an H? Not, can you tell what he was intending, but is it an H? And you say, no, that's exactly what the Gemara just did there. Right? According to the Ritva, what it did was this. The Gemara said, wait a second, maybe the non-obvious case is...
But then why does it throw out the Tagen then?
Hey, he didn't say Tagen, he said Kotzel Shel Yud.
I know, but...
According to the Ritva, how does the Gemara read? The Gemara said, Hava Amina was, this is not obvious that this is possible because I can sort of make out it's a yud.
Right.
Maskana is,
no,
but it's not a yud.
Right.
You can tell what he wanted. You can tell that he was about to go towards yud, but it's not because that's not yet a yud.
And the Gemara takes this answer?
This is the Ritva. According to the Gemara. Okay. And yes, according to the Ritva, this is what the Gemara says.
So he's kind of not...
Okay, number five. What is five? Five is the Itter, right? The Itter, look at number six. Read the Itter. Nachum, take the Itter.
Parshiyot Shebet Tefillin.
Arba Parshiyot Shebet Tefillin. The four Parshiyot and Tefillin.
They're ma'akiv upon each other. Afilu kasav aleph, even if you write one.
V'ilu katav echad ma'akvan, even one, right, one of them.
Is ma'akev.
Yeah.
Shita, this is obvious. Lo nitzra ela, the kotzer shel yud. That this is only, like, it's only needed for the kotzer shel yud. He tika de yud kodesh le.
And what is that?
I don't know. I have a question.
Tavion.
Yeah, this is, not this, but this is like the crown stuff, right? Not like part of the letter at all, it's like the decorative crowns, right? The tagin, right? Really the tagin.
It's still a kosher letter.
So you look, and he says, and you'll tell me, oh, but it's still kosher without the tagin, right?
Well, in the Torah it's not.
And he says, right, because the Shimusha Rabbah says that these are Halachal Moshe Misinai. Okay, good. Okay. By the way, I gave you the Mordechai also. Where is the Mordechai? This is just an exercise. Guys, 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 where is the Mordechai? An educate, right? Who is the Mordechai and where is he found?
All the way after the Rosh Hashanah.
Good. The Mordechai is after the Rosh. Well, or not so much, but yeah, okay. He's someone contemporary. Oh, yes. Physically, yes. But when does he live? What's his name?
Mordechai
ben Hillel. He is a student of, just like the Rosh, a student of the Maharam Mirutenberg, which tells you that he's from where?
Rutenberg.
Germany, right? In Germany. Right? The Maharam Mirutenberg has three major students. Okay, the Maharam Mirutenberg is important. The Maharam Mirutenberg is the last, major Balat Tosfot in Germany before what happens? Germany collapses and people leave, right? Or, right? Basically, right, Jews try to get out of there, right? Because it's really bad, right? The Maharam Mirutenberg had a miserable end of his life. How did the Maharam die? No. The Maharam was captured, thrown in jail, ransomed, right? Held for ransom, and what did, and the Jewish community raised the money, and then what happened?
They killed him anyway.
No. He said, you're not allowed to get me out of prison, because if you pay the exorbitant ransom, there's a prohibition in the Gemara of paying an exorbitant ransom, because it will encourage the Jewish community, right? It will encourage people to continue to kidnap Jews, and therefore you are not allowed to ransom me, you have to let me die in jail. So he died in jail despite the fact that they had successfully raised the ransom money, because he forbade them from ransoming him, right? And therefore he died in jail, right? Until, what? This is the 14th century. I don't know the exact year. Right? This is Marami Rutenberg, mayor of Rutenberg. And he eventually gets ransomed only after his death for a lower price and gets buried next to the person who ransoms him. Right? This is the Marami Rutenberg. He is super, super important. Who, by the way, is named for the Marami Rutenberg? Guys in my share from last year should know this.
You should.
Yes, because I've said it to you before.
Yeah, no, his son has.
My oldest son, Meir. Meir is named for the Maharam Mirutenberg because the Maharam Mirutenberg is my wife's favorite Rishon. Because, yes, in my family we have favorite Rishonim, right? And therefore, Meir is named. Yes.
Who's your favorite Rishon?
I don't know, but my wife is very convinced that hers is the Maharam Mirutenberg. Hence, my oldest son is Meir, after Meir of Rutenberg, of Rothenberg, right? My third son is also named for Balei HaTosfot because his first name is Shmuel. Named after the Rashbam.
Your third son?
Yes, our Ezra. Shmuel Ezra.
Oh, okay.
He is Shmuel Ezra. He is Shmuel Ezra. He's actually Shmuel Ezra.
I said Ezra.
Right? Shmuel is named for the... Right? His name is actually after the Rashbam. Right? Well, actually, he's named for two Balei HaTosfot. Right? Shmuel, as in the Rashbam, and Shmuel of Falej. And if anyone knows why I named him for Shmuel of Falej, I'll be very impressed. But no one knows why I named him for Shmuel of Falej. You barely know why I named him the Rashbam. You barely know the Rashbam is. But Shmuel of Falej, you've never heard of. Bikitsur, right? Shmuel of Falej wrote what he is known for, having written a halachic commentary on a halachic poem by Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elem, which teaches you Hilchos Pesach, of which you only know part of, which is... You say the end of your Seder, Chasal Seder Pesach Hilchato, is actually not the end of the Seder, it's the end of a poem that you were supposed to learn on Shabbos HaGadol that taught you Hilchos Pesach before Pesach.
And was Ezra born around Pesach?
Yes, he's born around Pesach. Very good. That's why he was named for Shmuel. You would say, why is he not named Yom Tov after Yom Tov, after Yom Tov, Yosef Tov Elem? Yosef after Yom Tov? Good question. Now, he's named Shmuel because, right, the Rashbam had incredible breadth. Right, he was an equal of Parshan on Tanakh and on Chumash, and Shmuel Falej had creativity in how he taught Torah because he wrote Pirushim on poems. Right, so it was to increase breadth and versatility in Talmud Torah. That was the logic there. You can think I'm crazy. That's fine. Ezra was because we were coming back to Israel.
Is Ezra landing already?
So hence Ezra and Tanakh.
Usually people right? call that.
Technically, Ezra. Also by the way, the Maram's Rebbe was also Ezra, but no one knows that because his Rebbe was a very not known Balei Tosfot named, well, at least one of them, which was Ezra Hanavi of Mount Kantor.
Him,
exactly, yes. Anyways, close parentheses. What?
Was he actually a Navi?
No, but he was like a mystic, so he was called Ezra Navi. Anyways, so Maharam Mirutenberg. Anyways, this is the Maharam Mirutenberg. Yes. There are other Anyways, that's the Maharal Meir Rundberg for you, okay? So, Maharal Meir Rundberg had three major students. They are the Mordechai ben Hillel, the Rush, right? And the Haggot Maimoni, right? What was in common to all three of those people?
Their Rebbe was the...
Besides them all being Rebbe the Maharam.
They're all from Germany.
Thank you. They all write their Pirushim attached to what? No, none of them wrote attached to the Gemara. They write on Sephardi Rishonim. The Rush and the Mordechai are both technically written according to the Seder of the Rif. The Rif and the Haggot Maimoni is written according to the Seder of what? The Rambam. And the reason for this, as Professor Kanefogel likes pointing out, is because why did they do this? And I just told you, because... No, they were not. They were Ashkenazi. Germany is Ashkenaz. Because Germany was collapsing. So what was the way to make sure that the Torah of Germany was preserved? By attaching it to the Sephardi books, because the Sephardi culture was not collapsing. Right? That's why they did it. Because where did the Rush move to while the community was collapsing in Germany?
Spain.
Spain, thank you. Right? And that's why his son, Rabbi Yaakov Balaturim, is a Sephardi Rishon who records Ashkenazi practices. Now it all makes sense historically, right? There's actually a logic to how things happened, right?
We all get tested on this.
Yep, exactly. I give you a test on this at the end of the year, but hopefully now you have a bit of an idea who we're talking about. Yes, we love the Maharam. By the way, who is one of the world's leading... This was a bit of like creepy history. I remember my professor from YU really got freaked out by this. But I don't know if you remember a few years ago, there was a Israeli soldier that got captured in Gaza, and they weren't sure what happened to his body, and they were worried he was going to be ransomed, named Hadar Golden, right? His father is one of the world scholars of the Maharal Meir Rundberg, right? Which totally freaked out medievalists, because his son's body, right, was then in the same situation as the Maharal Meir Rundberg, which totally freaked out my medievalist professors.
Sounds pretty creepy. What happened?
It did happen. I've like lost track, unfortunately, of all the things that happened. Someone look it up. Look up. Did we recover him? I feel terrible now that I don't remember this. But there's.
Oh, what's his name?
Hadar Golden. What did happen?
Apparently.
I don't think it's been resolved, but I don't remember.
He died.
He died, I know. But was his body ever given back? Did we ever get his body back? I don't remember. Eventually, it was discovered that he was dead, right? But then what? Did he get his body back? I don't remember. Anyways, you'll get back to me, okay? Fine. So, the Mordechai, therefore, is, like the Rush, writing on the organization of the Rif, right? The Mordechai ben Hillel. So, in Tuf, Kuf, Nun, Bet, right, which is the first piece that he has here on Perek HaKometz, HaKometz Rabbah, what does he write? Shtei Parashiyosh HaMezuzah Me'akvin Zeh. Pshita, Amar of Yehuda, L'Nitzra, Elul, Kotzo, Shel Yud. And he summarizes for you, Perish HaKuntris, Regel Yemini, Rashi says the right leg, the Kasher of Inutam, Dezohi Pshita, Deve Gufa, Shel Yud. That can't be, because that is the body of the Yud of the Inan. Acher, Lave, L'Nukuda, V'Alma, V'Lomikri, Oat. Right, it's a dot without a letter. V'Haloshon, Mashma, Delav, Kotzo, Mikri, Yud. Right, that without that is called a yud. Midam rinan shel yud. Right, he's a bit clearer than Rabbeinu Tam. He says, what's the problem? We're looking for something. This goes back to your question, Nachum. Which is a yud, just invalid. Not something which is not a yud. Because we call it the kotzo shel yud. This is not the kotzo shel yud. That is just... No. The kotzo shel yud. This is not the kotzo shel yud. That is part of the yud. Right, that is the yud. Upeirish Rabbeinu Tam, the hainu regal. Yeah.
So it seems that his body was not recovered.
Thank you.
And
okay, thank you. That is why medievalists were freaked out. Is that
there's a countdown clock?
Yes. So this is why certain people, unfortunately, right? Meaning it is right. It is a bit creepy, right? Please God, his body will be returned eventually. But you know, considering the fact that, yeah, his father studied in Maram, was famous for his death, where he was, you know, captured, and then only much later was his body released. He was held, his body was held in captivity as well, until it was ransomed. Yeah. Anyways, sad things sometimes in Israeli history. V'lo mikri ot. V'aloshen mashmer lav kotzo mikri yud. Midamrinan shel yud. Uperish ben utam. Dahainu regel asmali shel yud. Shu kafuf mat. Right? Rabbeinu Tam says it is the... Right, this part of it. Right now. Why, by the way, is... What is the advantage of Rabbeinu Tam over... Right? What's the advantage of this? This is sort of part of the letter itself, right? It's not just a crown on top. Right? The thing that goes down seems like it's part of the letter.
So is the top, though.
Well, not really, right?
The top is part of the letter.
No, it's a tag, right? Okay.
Yeah, but without the top, it's still chronic.
Fine. So far, guys, are we somewhat clear on what... all the possibilities of what exactly this tag of the yud means.
Yeah.
Somewhat clear. Okay, what I want you to do tomorrow is what time is it? How much time do I have?
It's 11:55.
I have a few more minutes. Okay. So what I want you to do tomorrow is the following. Okay, we've sort of set up the basic contours of this Gemara. But what I want you, again, to figure out is, and I've already sort of set this up, why might a letter be invalid? So let's just go over it conceptually. Why might a letter be invalid? So one might not, okay. So what's the most basic reason why a letter would be invalid?
Because it doesn't look like
it's not that letter at all, right? Another is you can't read it, right? Or
it's missing part.
It's missing part, which is halachically critical. What else?
If a child can't identify.
So this is going to be part of your end goal, is to figure out why. Okay, let's try this. Why does the Gemara think that a good test of a letter is to have a kid who's not too smart and not too dumb look at the letter? Where does that come from?
You won't contemplate. Well, because you obviously don't know what letter is supposed to be.
Yes, this is where it comes from.
Yeah.
Why? Why is that a good test?
He's not biased.
What do you mean he's not biased?
He doesn't know that he's full biased.
Okay, why does he have to be not too smart and not too dumb?
Because
he doesn't know how to read it.
Because if he's too
smart. Okay, let's. Well, there are two sides here. Why can't he be too dumb?
Because then he won't be able to read.
Because then he can't read. Good. Why can't he be too smart? Correct, right? That's what Rashi says. He will look at it and say, God can't be killed. That must say, Vayaharog and not Yehareg. Right? What do we want him to do?
Not to what he sees.
Yes, we just want anybody who can just read the letter, not in context, because... Right? You've probably all done this, right? You've probably done all these, you know, at different points in life, been shown different versions of, like, the Rorschach test and things like that. Right? What's the Rorschach test? The ink blot. Right? We all know that our brain can play with it and make us see all types of things. Right? We can also see letters where they don't exist. Right? We all know, right, that if you sort of draw, like, I don't know...
I see a A.
Right, you already know. Here, if I do this, right, you could all sort of guess, right, that is supposed to be an A, right? Is it an A?
No,
that is not an A, right? Your brain will jump to it, right? If you had this, right? Right, this is like basic psychology here, right? Right? We all know that your brain is capable...
Oh, it's like when you have letters and numbers and stuff.
You know how you only read like the first and last letter, right? Anyways, right? You could throw whatever you want.
Yeah.
Correct. Therefore, what's the problem with giving an adult the Sefer Torah? What are they going
to
do?
He knows how to read it.
Yes, they're not going to try to read the letter. They're going to intuit what the letter is supposed to be.
They read the word.
They're going to read the word. We need a kid... because we need someone who recognizes letters but doesn't read yet, right? Doesn't understand, right? Doesn't really read, doesn't conceptualize, right? You know, you need a kid really at the age where what is he going to look at the letter and say?
The word itself, that's it.
Right? He's just going to say, I see an A, right? I see an Aleph, I see a Bet, right? Not, I see Yaharog or Yehareg, right? That's why you need it, but... Good, that's why it's a good test, right? But what we're looking for is, okay, but which letters are going to be invalid because they aren't a letter at all? Which ones are invalid because they're missing a little bit? They're just, you know, they don't fit all the strictures, right? And what you're going to see here, you're going to have to look at the Gemara number 7. The Gemara is going to introduce a principle in writing the Sefer Torah called Ktiva Tama. What does Ktiva Tama mean? Or Ktiva Sama?
Perfect writing.
Is that the Torah doesn't need just Ktiva, it needs Ktiva Tama. And this is probably an easy way for me to frame what we're going to see tomorrow, which is, now that we've set up the different things Kotzal Yud can be, what we need to do is figure out in all these invalidations, right? If the Torah needs Ktiva Tama in every invalidation, why might a letter be pasul?
If it's not a full letter.
This is how
it's not a full letter.
I'm going to do this for Lichtenstein style. Because it's
not
Ktiva, or it's not Tama. Either because it doesn't qualify as writing, or because it does qualify as writing, but it isn't perfect. Right? Anything that is not even writing is going to be invalid where? Whenever you need writing, Torah, Get, Ketubah, anything. If you decide that something is writing, it's just imperfect, when is that going to be invalid? For Sefer Torah, when you need the special strictures. And the big question each of these is, right? And every psul, now this, by the way, this Chakira is going to carry you through to all questions in writing for you, Sofrim. Every time. Is the invalidation we're looking at invalid because it's not even writing, or is it merely not perfect? Now, there is a third psul, and that is, right? And someone said it before, it's not that it's not ksiva, it's not that it's not perfect, right? It's a, these are all, right? Right? It's that it looks too much like something else, right? That's another reason, right? Which is, there's confusion, right? Meaning, it may technically be a Yud, but it looks too much like a resh, or looks too much like a vav, right? That's not invalid because it's not writing, and it's not even invalid because it's not perfect. It might sort of be, in a very formal sense, right, a letter, right? But the invalidation is external, namely, that we can't read with it because it looks like something else. Now we're going to see, again, now, the two nafkamines you're going to be looking for, one I've said several times is it possible in every area? But there's going to be another one, which is what you're going to look for, which is, should I give it away and then you'll see it in the sources, or do you want to try to figure out what the more interesting nafkamina is?
More interesting.
Okay, good. There's another very interesting nafkamina that you're going to be looking for, which is going to have to do with just the writing of Sefer Torah itself. Your goal tomorrow is going to figure out what that is. That's what you get here in number 8 in the Beit Yosef. And as I gave you at the top, what I want you to try to do tomorrow is get through these sources, and also, if you finish it and you want to try your modern Hebrew to bring it all together, right, try reading chapter 18 in the Rabbi Soloveitchik book, which, just so you know, there's one in the front, but we gave it out to all the Shana Bet guys. So all Shana Bet guys, bring at the end of last year, this is what we gave you. It was my suggestion to give it to you because we're going to use it this year. So this book is around the Beit Midrash. All the Shana Bet guys have it, so you can borrow it from the Shana Bet guys. Or if you're a Shana Bet guy, bring yours. Okay? We told you, bring it back next year because you're using it this year.
Why don't you just leave it here?
Chapter 18. Okay, chapter 18 in here is about 4 or 5 pages, right, of modern Hebrew, which will bring these ideas together. I know it's a bit confusing, but...
Why'd you bring it home?
You can do it.